Blog Talk Radio.
Alone. And a very, very good evening, everyone. This is your host, Leslie Mitchell-Clark, and I am so pleased to welcome you to another episode of Contact. Forgive me, it's a little bit chilly here in the East Coast. We've been in quite a deep freeze, but we trust that very soon things will start warming up, and eventually there will be spring. So there we go. We're going to hold on to that thought. And I'm very excited because this evening we are welcoming back one of our highly, highly favored guests. We are pleased to be welcoming back author, teacher, metaphysician, and noted Akashic Records reader, Anne Gail Rose. And Miss Rose and her husband and twin flame, Ahonu, are also the hosts of the popular blog talk radio show, The Honest to God Series, which airs every Saturday morning at 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time and features a wide variety of fascinating expert guests from the realms of metaphysics, spirituality, and related disciplines. Additionally, Ahonu and Anne Gail Rose also host a vibrant Akashic Records online group, which may be accessed one Sunday a month at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time through their website or through Anne Gail Rose's website, which is www.AnneGailRose.com. And Anne Gail Rose is also the author of two enlightening books, A Time of Change, Akashic Guidance for Spiritual Transformation, and The Nature of Reality, the second book of Akashic Guidance for Spiritual Transformation, both really illuminating books. And they're actually compendiums of the many profundities that have been revealed through hundreds, actually maybe at this point even thousands of sessions with their weekly Akashic Record reading groups. Anne Gail and Ahonu also run a variety of classes and workshops out of their San Diego, California headquarters, including their recent spiritual surgery training, which I'd like to hear all about. And as always, in the second half of the program, the phone lines will be open for listener calls and comments. And our own Wes Roberts, the producer of this show, is going to be monitoring the very popular Contact chat room. So be sure and log on and let us know what you're up to and if you have a question or comment for Anne Gail Rose. Okay, so without further ado, I'm going to open up the line. I see from the virtual switchboard, I think that we have Anne Gail already with us. Let me just open up the line there. Good evening. Is this Anne Gail?
It is. Hi, Leslie. Nice to be with you again.
Hi there. I'm so pleased that you could join us. Boy, I bet it's absolutely lovely in San Diego. We're kind of suffering. We're suffering here. It's a real Chicago style winter. Let me put it that way.
Well, actually, it's rainy. It's been raining since last night, which of course we need, so we're not complaining.
Yeah, so, well, rain. You know, I can't feel too much pity about that.
We
right
don't
now,
pity
but. Anyway, we're so happy that you've joined us this evening. I know we're going to be talking about all kinds of fascinating stuff, and I think Wes is on the line. Wes Roberts, are you there?
I am. Hello. Good evening to you both.
All right.
Hi, Wes.
Thank you.
How are you?
I am well. Good to have you back on the show.
Thank you.
All right. Now, Anne Gail, before we get going on some of the more meaty topics of the show this evening, I really wanted to ask you about your spiritual surgery training course. And is that moving ahead? And can you tell us a little bit about what's involved with that? I find it fascinating.
Yeah, it's actually called psychic laser therapy. And it was the therapy that I have done for about 15 years. I don't do so much of it anymore, but I do teach it. It is a form of psychic surgery, but it works predominantly in the etheric layers and in the light bodies around the body. And It's designed to go in and remove and repair everything that you see in the light field. So, but what we find is that this is actually where people hold their karma.
Yeah.
The karma actually appears as images in the auric layers, and you can see people's other lifetimes. You can see wounds that haven't healed. You'll find entities. You'll find implants. You'll find scenes from other countries. I mean, really, the gamut is it's just unlimited in the types of things that you see around people. And this particular therapy, when you start getting in there and removing these images and thought forms, basically, is what they are, but these thought forms really do affect a person on all levels. You know, it can take energy from people. It can be the reason why they keep attracting particular things throughout their lives over and over and over again. It can cause pain in people's bodies that they may have had for years and no doctor can figure out why. And then you look in their fields and you see that they've got a sword sticking in them from another lifetime, or they have a bullet wound or an arrow still stuck in their fields. So
yeah.
When you go in there and you remove these things from people, all of a sudden the energy's flowing through their whole system. And not only that, the frequency of that event, the actual vibration of it, leaves. So it's almost like you're literally freeing people from lifetimes of karmic imprints and wounds and all sorts of things that have been hanging out in their fields for, you know, sometimes centuries. Because you bring that stuff back in with you through each lifetime.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. In fact, I know there are many, many cases in the study of past life regression and multiple lifetimes where people will bring in really physicalized scars in their dense physical body. And for that, you know, that they're carrying with them from a previous lifetime, an injury or something like that. So for that to occur, the actual injury would have to be traveling in the etheric body, because the etheric body would inform the new physical body, as it were.
That's right. And you've probably seen plenty of that yourself, haven't you?
Actually, I have. I've seen physicalizations of past life experiences. And certainly there are, though we're not really getting into the ufology thing, but there are implants that can be carried in the etheric body. They're implants that are not necessarily physical, but have been, you know, placed in the entity's etheric body at some point. So I know that these things absolutely exist.
They do seem some pretty complicated implants in people's energy fields, which do interfere with the whole electrical circuitry of their body. But when you take them out, I mean, I've seen some in the brain, the nasal cavities. I've seen some down in the bones and the legs. And people usually do have problems in those areas. You know, I was doing a session on a man years ago, and every night when he fell asleep, his leg would jerk. And it was just, they couldn't stop it. They didn't know why his leg constantly jerking. And the guy was probably in his 60s. And this has been going on for many years, but as soon as I took that implant out of his leg, out of the bone, all of that jerking stopped at night.
Wow.
Okay.
Do you think that the implant had been installed during his present lifetime, or do you think that implants can be carried in the etheric body through multiple lifetimes?
Yeah, I had the feeling that this man had had it for a long time, because I actually went back to a lifetime of his in ancient times where he looked more ape-like. Okay? And the feeling that I had was that he kind of came from a genesis that was, you know, kind of monkey ape-like, even though he was upright. And they'd been tracking him ever since. And what was so interesting, he was human now, obviously, but he did have very odd ears, you know, for a human.
Yeah. Yeah.
know, my feeling is that this goes way back because it's not only, it's always been about experimentation as far as I can see, you know, of some type and tracking offspring, you know?
Yeah, indeed, you're absolutely correct. And it's not, I was just rereading, I wanted to share this with you. I was just rereading the original Edgar Cayce Reflections on Atlantis. It's a little thin book that one of his sons put out, and it, you know, I think I have a copy from, you know, 1964 or something like that. But indeed, you know, he spoke a lot about in the Atlantean era, which we would probably equate to the Anunnaki time. I believe they were involved. You know, they had the Temple of Beauty and the Temple of Sacrifice, and in the Temple of Beauty, they did a lot of work as far as trying to relieve the suffering of beings that had been upgraded from an animal or simian state and still were carrying characteristics, which could include feathers and tails and all kinds of other things. So it makes complete sense that every once in a while we would get a revenant kind of a latent DNA pattern. In fact, it's not really commonly known, but lots of babies are born with tails, lots. And they generally just snip them off at birth and no one ever knows. But it's not at all uncommon.
Oh, I never knew that. That's fascinating.
Yeah, it's true.
That's very fascinating. Yeah. Well, I do know, too, that, you know, a lot of times I will see reptilian attachments on people's backs.
Mm-hmm.
And those are another very ancient sort of being that's very primal. And they do to people's backs, and they do take energy and cause, they'll either cause almost like an addictive sexual thing or the complete reversal. You know, somebody won't have any. And they can also cause people to say things and get angry and in a few minutes later say, now, where did that come from? Why did I say that? You know?
Well, the reptilians have... Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Aunt Gail.
No, I was just saying that that's very common, actually. You'd be surprised how many people have those attachments.
I would not be surprised. I really wouldn't. And, of course, you know, reptilians don't, you know, they have an amygdala. They don't have a frontal lobe. So as far as being reactive, you would expect to see that if you were dealing with any type of reptilian DNA or influence of that nature. Wes, what do you think about all this?
Yeah, sorry, I just was muted there for a sec. I'm wondering if we'll ever get to the point, actually, where traditional medicine will be able to detect these kinds of implants. And I was just shaking my head a second ago, too, because oddly enough, and I don't know what it is. It could be a physical thing, but I've had leg cramps for like 20 years, and they mostly happen at night, and it just, my legs just fire off all by themselves.
Yeah. Well, that might be an interesting thing to take a look there, Wes, to see what might be going on. Right, yeah. Because, you know, like with this guy, too, the implant that I saw in his leg was actually down more by the ankle on the outside, in that bone there, right above the ankle. And it had such complex wiring in it that I had to be, and it looked like they would pulse him. You know, at various times, just, I don't know why they do that, but they bothered him all night long. And, you know, the feeling I did have was they didn't want this guy waking up. And anytime he made progress in waking up and becoming more aware, you know, that type of pulsing in the legs would just increase. So it's quite interesting. Yeah.
Oh my gosh!
Wow.
So this keeps me from sleeping, actually. But and I've tried various remedies for it. But just getting back to this for a sec, I'd be fascinated to know how these appear to you when you see them, like literally as you just described.
Well, different at different times. Like the ones in the brain, she do look like little tiny chips that are maybe a quarter square. And they have all these little wires coming out in each direction. There are some that I've seen in the brain. They They seem, a lot of them seem to start with those little square chips, or they could be little rectangle, but it's ring that I find is different. In other words, the wiring can be anything from tiny little filaments that when you remove them, they just disintegrate and they're simple, to others that are complex wiring that actually go through the brain, and like with this guy, went into the bone.
Oh my gosh.
So it's the wires that come off them that are different.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I have a feeling, too, with each implant and each type, there's a different reason. You know, like the ones that are embedded in the brain, they're varying. You know, they're designed to interfere with the person's brain capacity. There's others that are in the nasal cavities that sometimes they're harmless. You just suction them off and, you know, they've been tracking devices enrolled and they come out. The person I was mentioning who had it in his leg, that was definitely designed to cause the guy discomfort and send frequency pulses to annoy him so that he stayed at a particular level of consciousness. So it really depends who put him there and what their agenda was with the person.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
And do you think, Angale, that there can also be implants that are designed in a benevolent way to help with an upgrade, or to perhaps stimulate the pineal gland or aid with communication? But you wouldn't necessarily see those when you're treating someone who's having a negative experience.
That's true, because you know, when I go in there to do the surgery, you know, you join with the person's higher self, and your intention is that you're only going to be able to see what needs to be removed. Okay, so in the example that you're giving where somebody could have a positive implant, it is true that I wouldn't see it, not in that type of session, because that's not the purpose. But I know for myself that I've had upgrades, and they've come through dreams. You know, like I'd be taken to a whole other dimension. I'd be told to drink a particular liquid. When I'd wake up, I'd be activated and my psychic sight would turn on. In fact, that's actually how I started doing psychic surgery. But those beings were female and they were tall. And when I saw them, I felt like I knew them, like they were old sisters or something. So I do think there is activations or times set up for certain people where those activations are almost like in the contract, you know?
They occur
at different times, yeah. But I wouldn't say that I felt that an implant caused that. I felt like I was actually taken into different dimensional space, and it was arranged. Like, I didn't feel like they were doing something against my will. In other words,
right.
I felt like it was a timing thing, you know?
Right. I completely understand, and I agree with you. I think that there are timelines where certain things get activated when we're talking about a benevolent scenario. And I know that Wes has had a number of experiences like that where he's received some type of an upgrade, maybe not an implant necessarily, but some type of an energy infusion. Isn't that the case, Wes?
Actually, yes. I've had a couple of memories about this, about something being put down through the top of my head, for instance, and about being in a liquid, too, which is interesting that you mentioned that, because I've had an experience where I was in kind of a liquid, and I felt that I was absorbing something. For the life of me, I couldn't tell you what it was. And, you know, I've always sort of come out of this experience, especially through Leslie's work, thinking, all right, you know, something just happened, and hopefully I'll become aware of it at some point.
Yeah, you know, I had one, too, where I was, since you mentioned water and liquid, you know, the one I just mentioned was, it was actually a cup or a chalice of, like, an orangey gold liquid that I drank. But there was another time where I was taken underwater, and I just remember that the water was like a blue-purple color in it, felt different than our water. It was almost as if it, I don't know, had a very different quality to it. And I was surrounded by dolphins and beings, and they were telling me to breathe with my mouth open, you know, and it was like some old memory that we used to be able to breathe in this liquid and we wouldn't drown. That was another activation of sorts, you know?
Wow.
Yeah, so I remember that. They were all around me and, you know, wanting me to take in, just open my mouth. And I remember feeling the fear under the water, like, oh, I can't take a breath. But
yeah. They
were kind of saying, yeah, you know, you used to do this. You know, you used to taking it all through the top of your head. You used to breathe through the top of your head. Now open your mouth.
Well, why not? You know, and it's interesting that certainly in the realm of science that they've been experimenting with breathable liquid, and I believe that we actually have it. You've seen it in a lot of sci-fi things. You know, I think there's breathable liquid that is being used for deep sea diving. So we still do have the ability to inhale liquid and take the oxygen elements out of it. So. That's fascinating, Angale. Now, I haven't had a chance yet to read your most recent book. Certainly, we've talked about Time of Change, which was just fabulous, and, you know, a whole compendium of the profundities. And I'm very anxious to take a look at your new book, The Nature of Reality. And have there been some, or what to you are the most sort of salient concepts or profundities that have come out of this work for the second book?
Well, I'd like our chapter on the brain. You know, we did a topic one. We did a group that was just a topic on the brain. And, you know, our intention was we were going to go and ask Source to explain all the different lobes and to tell us what they did. But when we asked the question of Source about the brain, it wasn't like that at all. You know, what I heard was that the brain did not want to be perceived as having separate anything. And I actually saw a hollow sphere of light with all these electrical firings going off all over the place. Okay? And what it said was that the brain was a transmitter and a receiver. And the way that it functioned was that our individual spirit self, is basically not like people think. You know, our spirit self is the us, and it's growing and evolving and becoming more aware. And it has experiences, and it makes up conclusions about the experiences, and so therefore it's associative. And once it does that, once it has a conclusion about something, the mind field out there takes that, turns it into a belief or a concept. That gets delivered to the brain. The brain says, okay, I'll translate that to chemicals and hormones, and it forms a body after it, okay? So the thing is that the condition of the brain in terms of how well it can transmit and receive has a whole lot to do with what we can access. And I really appreciated that whole process because we were told that the brain was unlimited in its capability to locate memory, locate knowledge. You know, it's totally non-local. It can pinpoint any place in the universe and download information about it and translate that to, you know, the body vehicle. I mean, I just thought to myself, oh, my God, when you think of what people do to themselves, that destroys their brain.
I just gained a whole
new appreciation of how unlimited we are in terms of accessing, let's say, God mind, okay? A lot of it does have to do with the way your brain fires, and your brain fires according to your beliefs. So if you have very limited beliefs and you're brought up in dogma, your brain will fire only a particular way. It will not access higher illumination. It'll fire within the realm of your beliefs. Okay?
Yeah.
So that was one thing that fascinated me. The other thing was the fact that at the end of the book, you see, when I write a book, before I write it, I always go in and I ask Source for an image of the cover. And even though the cover that's on the book is not really the cover I got, the correct image is really on the back of the book. But it was a step pyramid that had white and pink crystal going up the front. And when you got to the top, it was this beautiful golden sun. And I didn't understand what it meant until I was all done writing the book. And the book took me longer than normal because I had stops and starts and I couldn't figure out why can't I put together, you know? My publisher was on my back saying, you know, you're really late, blah, blah. But as it turned out, it had to do with the topics that we were doing on Sundays because we started exploring the Kundalini and the chakras. And it turned out that the whole book was really about the process of becoming a God-realized being. And we, when we went in and talked to Kundalini, we asked Source what its definition of it was, and it said it was the path of courage. And when I heard that answer, I thought, well, that's an interesting answer. And it went on to talk about this process of refinement that we need to go through in order to purify the Kundalini so that it literally turns into this golden fire, which it used to be. And its potential when it does that is unlimited in terms of regeneration of the body, in terms of accessing the higher consciousness I just mentioned. Basically, you become an unlimited being in terms of you're not bound by physical laws anymore. But what I realized was this is the God force that's been put in one of us, literally in our body, to help us, you know, go to the whole process of illumination. And it all has to do with what we do with our choices and our beliefs and our decisions, because sources explain that we kind of do have this dark and light thing going on. And we have to choose to purify parts of our nature that are in alignment with this higher energy. So it's really the God force of nature, literally within your body. At the lowest level, in the root chakra, it is the force that allows us to reproduce. It's our instinctual nature. It's about some and sexuality and reproduction. But if most people just use the Kundalini energy only for that, they never take it up through the other chakras, which are all tuning forks in the physical body to actually become an illuminated being. And that's what the whole book ended up being about.
Oh, fascinating. And does this sort of tie into, we were speaking earlier about the idea of God as man or man as God? Is this sort of what you're talking about, where we have the capability, we were given the capability of this ascension, of this illumination, and yet, as Bashar says, we are the masters of limitation. So it's really up to us as far as, you know, like which faucets we're going to turn on.
Well, that's exactly it, and you'll find that most people want to do inner work. I mean, the path of the Kundalini, the path of courage, what it means is that, you know, we all get tested, we all get challenged, we all go through hard times, but it's about what do you do with those experiences? Do you turn them into virtues, or do you stay, do you refine the character? Do you build a character and a consciousness that moves towards greater and greater regions of love and non-judgment? Or do you stay in your victimizer consciousness and you get into blame and punishment and revenge? What do you do with yourself? What do you do with your choices? Because as I mentioned earlier, you know, when we were talking about the brain, the way it all works is that our individual spirits make the decisions. We observe, we decide, we witness, we experience. And then we translate that into concepts and beliefs and associations. The brain takes that and turns it into chemicals and hormones, and that's what you end up with as a physical body. So if you take on the path of refining your character and releasing dogmas and beliefs that are based on judgment and darkness, let's say, you literally do start to change the chemicals and hormones in your body. And each chakra in our body. Like I mentioned, they're tuning forks. So they have worlds within them as well. And we could do a study just on chakras. In fact, I am going to do a workshop that is a journey through the chakra system. It's going to be it's not going to be me teaching anyone. It's going to be an exploration into your own chakra system. Because I think what I realized through the book as well is that many of us were brought up in religions or dogmas that downplayed the body. You know, basically, if you're a tea channeler, you call it a container. If you're Catholic, then it's a sin to enjoy sex and, you know, indulge in the body. If you're a Course in Miracles student, the body's not real. So the body's really kind of been given a lot of things to make not really want to pay attention to it in the way that I'm talking. But throughout the course of the material, we realize that God has literally put this fail-safe inside every one of our bodies so that we can get ourselves out of the physical universe. We can get ourselves off the wheel of karma. We can overcome the limitations of gravity. I mean, it's put there. But we have to do the work of refinement in order to raise the body to that point.
Yeah. That makes an awful lot of sense. It certainly does. And at this point, Angale, do you feel that, there's some very, you know, depressing news. I don't watch much news myself, but I'm wondering now if we're almost not separating in a way from the people who are becoming illuminated and their vibrations are higher, and then there are the people that are refusing, absolutely refusing once again to acknowledge their spiritual potential and are so grounded in the physical and in the negative. Do you feel that there's a greater polarization happening, or are we in fact going to be able to, you know, to pull these people who are so based in the third density, you know, out of the primordial slime, as it were?
That's a good question. Interesting way to put it, Leslie.
I think I used to eat primordial slime at university. I'm not sure.
Like does attract to itself that which it is, right? And, you know, what's going on with the planet and the world now is probably like 3 months ago, people always ask me about the state of the Earth, right?
Yes.
And I actually did see this layer. It was the first time I saw it, this tangible layer of light move in and start to intermix with our grids. And I've seen light coming in before. I've seen light coming in from the cosmos. But I've not ever really seen it as an actual physical layer that was merging with our Earth, okay? So the feeling I got about that was actually very positive, because it made me know that it's all going to end up being a new Earth that we all want, okay? But in this process, it's inevitable that you're going to have, you know, the mud surface. Because you just can't bring in this new layer of light and have all of the unhealed stuff sit at the bottom, you know? It's all being stirred up now, and we're actually watching how some people, they can't handle this at all, okay? Think of the way the moon works on our bodies every month. When we get to the full moon, it actually pulls on the water in our cells. We all increase in their emotions. A woman's period will get stronger, you know. People feel like they're losing their minds. So I want you to think, now we've got this incredible light coming in that is very, very pure in its content and concentrated. And now it's acting on people's nervous systems and cells, and it's pulling on all of that old paradigm that just does not sit well anymore. And what you are watching is people are either freaking out and going insane, and for some people, it's turning into suicidal depression, okay? And other people are riding the wave, and all of a sudden they're having these downloads of fantastic realizations. So we do have these two things going on. And this is exactly what I mean about a purification process that's happening, because we have to be able to absorb, digest, integrate these new energies, and we have to be willing to get rid of anything else that doesn't match it. But I do think I also see people who would be very ingrained in dogmas, for example, all of a sudden changing their minds, shifting to other realizations that are more enlightened. So we really do have a mixed bag going on right now in terms of how people react to this energy. And I think that's actually what's happening is it's almost like, if you've got this little demonic energy and all of a sudden you switch on a light and it freaks out, or reminds me of the Wicked Witch of the West in The Wizard of Oz when Dorothy throws the pail of water on her and she melts, you know?
That's right, because she absolutely cannot handle the purity of the water.
That's right.
That makes an awful lot of sense. That really does. And so, what are some of the other? Now, you have been having your Akashic Records reading sessions for a very long time, yourself and Ahonu. How long have you actually been exploring the Akashic Records in a group setting?
Since 2009 in Ireland.
Wow. That's where it began, in Ireland.
It began in Ireland because we had so many people coming for private readings. This was before 2012 now, of course. So 2007, remember, we had our financials crash, you know?
Yes.
And people had lost jobs and they were wondering about earth changes in 2012. And so it started because I just had so many people asking me those questions that we started having groups. And what we found was that the way Source was answering those questions made us move to more concentrated topics. for example, one night we were exploring Atlantis and Lemuria, and the trees came in because in exploring the Lemurians, they told us that they were actually responsible for bringing a lot of the trees to the earth. And in fact, they were saying that their energy was actually in a lot of trees.
Yeah.
Which is pretty interesting. So then all of a sudden the trees popped up and said, and yeah, we want to talk to you.
Wow.
So we have a topic night just on communicating with the trees. And that was just absolutely phenomenal. I have yet to publish that. It's going to end up in one of the future books. But,
well, we know the trees are talking to each other. They can measure the sound, and they know that trees are connected in a subterranean sense, sometimes by mushrooms or sometimes by other symbiotic life. So there is plant communication, there is tree communication going on. It's provable. And now you and Ahonu, now that you're based in San Diego, you guys are living right on the last tip of Lemuria. You're practically in it down there.
Well, let me tell you what happened in Ireland, shall I?
Yes, please.
On our last trip, which was quite shocking, but you know, did you ever know when you're going on some trips, and some trips are just normal trips, and other trips, it just seems like you're just kind of guided the whole way. Well, this was the case when we went to Ireland this last time. I got on that airplane, headed for Dublin, and all of a sudden this envelope of peace came over me and power, and I thought, whoa, I don't know what's going to go on this time, but it's pretty intense. So we ended up staying in a cottage that was on a property that had a standing stone. And the very next morning, the standing stone called Ahonu and I out to it. We both woke up at 6 in the morning and we heard this energy say, come out here. So as we went out, we found that it was very feminine and very loving. And it told me to pay attention to the aquifers under the earth. And that's all it said. So make a long story short, without going into a lengthy explanation, we ended up being guided to the most remotest, unheard of, sacred, ancient places that trip. And what we were being, I mean, this was holy wells, this was underground caves, this was some of your normal, your New Grange, your Hill of Tara, but we were guided to just hills that nobody ever heard of. And what we were being asked to do was to make mother tinctures out of the energy of all of these places, okay? So there I was collecting jars. I mean, I would literally call in the spirit of the land and say, all right, whatever part of you wants to come in and into this water. So you could tell when it came in, you just put the lid on, you take it home, and I collected about 30 with the time we had there. And they all wanted to be put together on this table, and they called themselves the assembly. And all of those waters started communicating with each other, and as it turned out, they hadn't been able to do that in many thousands of years because ley lines that connected them all had been broken or, you know, damaged in some way. And to listen to them talk to each other, they were bringing back this blueprint. And they actually said they were bringing back the swan energy. And I just got this sense of such pristine rightness and order, you know, the way it used to be, the way it was. And so then we started having groups, started ingesting them. We said, okay, these are like homeopathic mother tinctures. Let's see what they're like. And you put a dropper full in everybody's glass of water and everybody would drink it. And I'm telling you, what profound experience having by doing
wow.
that.
Wow.
And I've only just begun because they want me to do it in America. I just haven't gotten, we only just found our spot to live, okay? I'm not really aware of a lot of power spots in America, actually. So I just know that I do have to go to the Grand Canyon in Sedona. I mean, they're really making clear. But I'm also guided to a particular mountain in France. So this is only the beginning. Unfortunately, I could not ship those waters to America. Let me ship liquid from another country. So they're still in Ireland. But, that's a whole other level of grid work, you know? And it was
indeed
totally guided.
It reminds me a little bit it reminds me a bit in concept, perhaps, of some of the belief systems of the Native American and Native Canadians, and of course the Native Australians and many other Aboriginal cultures about water as a system, as a living connection, and its importance, and that it has to be healed. So essentially, there's an awful lot of healing of the water that needs to be done in North America, that's for sure.
Well, and the truth, and the thing is what we found from energies from these places and infusing them into water is that water is holding that imprint, and it communicates. And that was the reason the stone wanted me to pay attention. Because the places where we were going, of course, all those aquifers underneath those hills and underneath those holy wells, they all had connected to each other and they all held this particular information. And this place, there were places that we went to, there were some holy wells that when you tuned into the land, they had been compromised and there was incredible sorrow in those places. And, you know, I almost did not get the water. And then I heard them say, please take us with you. You know, we need to be healed, you know? What I haven't been able to do yet is actually go into the records with the bottles and get the history. And that's part of what I'll do when I go back to Ireland. Unfortunately, we had to leave. Our time was up, and there's just a lot more to do with those. But, you know, what's going on is all of those places and those energies are still very much alive, but their ability to run through the grids had been compromised by all the wars and the magic and all the other stuff, you know?
Yeah, indeed. And I think that's certainly true of all of our various communication systems from the ancient world, you know, the Umphala stones and just about anything else that you can think of, and our earth energy generators as well, from you know, the massive Bosnian pyramid to areas that are in Mount Shasta. I mean, I believe, and I think there are many like-minded people who also believe that there was a global communication earth energy system established, you know, by ancient technology, and that some of these ancient sites, and we've talked about this with Ahonu, certainly some of these ancient sites, these ancient generators are still functioning on some level. It would be possible to basically reincite a system of free earth energy. It existed before, and it could exist again.
Mm-hmm. Yes, if we could, you know, somehow get the powers that be to stop interfering with them all.
Yeah, no kidding.
You know, the church is capturing the energy and using it for their own dogma purposes and things like that. And you know, and even when we talk about the waters and the standing stones and the primordial caves that we were into, all having a memory in there, you know, they're not trying to put the world back to the way it was in their time. They're basically just want the communication system up and running again, you know? And that's a system based on, you know, a cooperation and a communication between the whole entire earth. Okay, so, you know, I remember, too, years ago when I went to Peru on a spiritual grid work expedition many, many years ago, we went to, I forgot, one place that was a pyramid in Peru. And, you know, when I tuned into it, I mean, the atmosphere wasn't even like it is now. I mean, it was filled with these incredible little golden particles. It was much more alive, and because of that, everything was different. And I think when we try to explore ancient civilizations, we're not always keeping in mind that maybe the land didn't look exactly the same, maybe the atmosphere wasn't like, you know, that it might have, the frequency of it, the vibration of it might have been very different than now. And I think we're trying to explain these civilizations in terms of our Earth today. And our Earth today, in my own opinion, does not hold that same potency, not the atmosphere.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. And certainly we know there have been many, many, you know, there have been polar shifts. There's been this, there's been that. And all you have to do is look at, you know, the Piri Reis map and some of these other ancient maps that that show, you know, Antarctica as a green kind of, you know, paradise that was inhabited. And I mean, there are detailed drawings in ancient maps, such as the Piri Reis map, that seem to show an aerial view, that definitely show all of these different earth changes. And certainly the Atlantic Ridge is, you know, what we have left of the Atlantis Ridge, and Atlantis was split into different parts and went through three different phases of destruction. I'm not exactly sure what happened to Lemuria. I believe it sank. Is that the concept of Lemuria and Gale? I know it coexisted for a time with Atlantis, but sometime in deep antiquity went through a cataclysm previous to the Atlanteans. Is that not true?
Well, you know, I don't get that info on Lemuria, and I know what I got was very different than what everybody else thinks, but the Lemurians told me that they were never physical.
Oh.
I wanted people to think back far enough to think in terms of beings who were standing columnar waves of light who lived on overtones. In other words, this density that we're aware of right now doesn't seem to have been quite as dense back then. Mm-hmm. And they said that they were predominantly light beings. They weren't, I could see in actual being, but I couldn't feel density like I could an Atlantean. To me, an Atlantean felt much more embodied. Okay?
Yeah.
Well, the Myrians basically were huge, and they had a lot to do with molding the atmosphere of the earth. They had a tremendous amount to do with starting to seed this planet and bring in plant life and create an atmosphere that could actually hold life. And my feeling about them was that they left at a time when they were no longer needed. You know, but when they said that they're actually part of their being is actually in the trees, that was a pretty interesting revelation to me, because it really made me realize that we don't have any idea of the beingness of trees, you know, like who they are as beings, really, and what their potential is and what they're all about. We do know that people will discover crystals and call them Lemurian seed crystals and all this. But, you know, they were really clear at the very onset to say we were never physical. You know, not the way we think of physical. Okay?
Well, do you think, Angale, that they were light beings from another planetary system that vibrated at a higher level, or were they beings from the spirit realm who were here, you know, terraforming, as you said?
I don't think they came directly from spirit. I would agree more that they would have come from their own planetary system, not in our solar system. Okay. And come here to actually, yes, terraform this earth. What I kept seeing was prepare an atmosphere, prepare colors, prepare a condition, you know?
Yes.
This planet could actually become a living system. They had a huge hand in that. So that's what I felt they came here to do. And there was such a time when the waters came and we had water and everything started working where they said, okay, job's done, see ya, you know? Now, are there Lemurians that are on planet Earth? Are there people walking around the Earth now that could have been those Lemurian beings? Yes, there are. But those people would definitely have something to do with the planetary mission, which is why they would be here now.
Mm. They would have had a choice as beings to incarnate and assume a more physical form if they, you know, felt if they had a role or a karmic path that needed to be enacted physically.
Yes, absolutely. Yep. But I don't feel there's a lot of them here. You know, I feel like they definitely would come in, and I feel there are some here now. Who are here doing advanced work for the preservation of the system or to help it move along. But it's not their native home and what I get from them, nor do they want it to be, you know?
Yeah.
It's quite interesting.
Wes, you have...
Yes, when you kind of see that...
I'm sorry, I was just going to ask what... Go ahead. Thank you.
No, I was just going to mention Atlantis because, you know, I actually just put out the transcript on Atlantis the other day. I didn't read through it all, but, you know, I never saw that the Atlanteans destroyed their civilization with crystal technology. Like a lot of people think, what I saw was, you know, cataclysmic changes that, like you mentioned earlier, took a long time and divided up Atlantis, where the Atlanteans spread all over the earth.
Yeah, it was a kind of a gradual, according to the Edgar Cayce channelings, it was a kind of a gradual diaspora, and again, had much more to do with earth changes than it did with aggression or misuse of crystals, although they did use crystals for all kinds of positive things. They used them as, you know, beacons and this and that, and in surgery and this type of thing, but... Yes, it was thousands and thousands of years, and they had lots of warning, and they went into the New World. They went into Egypt. That's why, you know, Egypt is sort of a colony, or the, you know, colony of Atlantis in a way, if you wish to think of it like that. But there's a big part of me that really hopes that, you know, Edgar Cayce maintained over and over again in all of his readings about the Atlantean subject that there, in fact, is a hall of records there that have been preserved not only underneath the feet of the Sphinx, which certainly predates even the old kingdom of Egypt, but in other parts of the world, there are records that will be found that will really illuminate our unknown, our forbidden history to us.
Right, I believe that as well. I do think we are discovering, you know, a smattering of them as well. You know, not necessarily back to the Atlanteans, but we are discovering really old manuscripts that, you know, challenge the whole crucifixion and lots of things that point to advanced technology. But I agree that they're all being uprooted now, just like all these old tunnels are. And I think those tunnels are going to open up a whole new can of worms as well, you know.
So. I think you're right. And I think probably if there wasn't such a political, you know, resistance, that any kind of research that would be done, you know, in and around the Sphinx would have probably already revealed something. I believe that they've used some deep exploration. What is the word for it? Where they send sound into the ground to see the shapes. Yeah. But I believe that they have already found some type of hollow chamber beneath the feet of the Sphinx, just as Edgar Cayce said. But unfortunately, because it's a political, you know, a hotbed over there, and they have some very backward people in charge of the antiquities in Egypt, such as Dr. Hawass, that any kind of further research is at this point not possible.
Right. Well, I do think all that is going to change, though. And, you know, kind of the attention's been taken off of Egypt in a way and gone to other places like Turkey and some of these other Russian discoveries. And all of those are important, too, because they have used that technology that you're speaking of with Stonehenge, as we know, and they're finding a whole new tunnel system and city under Stonehenge that is incredibly fast, you know?
Yes, I just read about that yesterday, as a matter of fact. Well, Angail, I cannot believe this, but we have 2 minutes left. Where does the time go? My God, if we were to hang out in person, we'd probably be up for 2 days. Well,
great.
I just want to thank you so much for joining us. I know Wes feels the same way. And so the best way for folks to investigate your to order your books and to also participate in the online group would be to go to angailrose.com.
angailrose.com or worldofempowerment.com. And we've got some pretty awesome workshops scheduled for this year, and we're getting those up now. So do take a look, because they're going to get a lot deeper. Right.
Yes, I imagine so. Well, we can't thank you enough for joining us, and I look forward to having you on the show again very, very soon. And what's the next exciting thing up on your calendar? Are you in a whole new doing any particular speaking at any conventions, or just doing your thing out of your headquarters?
Yeah, we haven't gotten that far yet. We're teaching the Akashic Records online a couple times this year, but we're going to do a 7-day in April called Healing Cosmic and Grief. And because we're just really going to address the fact that every one of us has this ancient core grief that we're all carrying around with us, and that's part of the huge healing of and shifting of the whole paradigm. So that's going to encompass a lot of levels, from the big picture all the way down to the personal. And it's kind of our intensive for the year. That's a biggie. And we're going to do some business training, because we've had more people who want to shift their business from, you know, a conventional way of doing it to going into their Akashic Records and looking at business from a whole different angle.
All right. Well, that sounds fascinating, Angail, and I want to hear more about that the next time you visit us. So thank you again. Every wonderful New Year's wish to you, Ahonu, and your family. And we just really are so grateful that you could join us this evening.
Thank you so much for having me, and bye, Wes, and happy New All as well.
Bye-bye. You too.
Thank you, Ann Gail. And good night from all of us at Contact. Good night, folks.